Welcome to the Alaska Radio Reader Rambler. I'm Sandy Harper here with my co-host Dick Reichman for our monthly potpourri of literary snacks for the mind and interviews. And today it is a great pleasure to welcome Kathy, a.k.a. Catherine Statham, a name familiar to those who love theater in Anchorage. Kathy was a drama critic for the ADN for 15 years and the Renaissance Woman plus drama critic for the Anchorage Times before that. And she was the creator and original host for Stage Talk, which I just heard was 10 years old, celebrating its decade. And now she's written a book, and it's a wonderful book. It's a page-turner. I give it 2 thumbs up for my review, and I've only read the draft, which Kathy gave me some years ago. So welcome, Kathy.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, tell us how you got inspired to write this book and the creative process and where it's at.
I was thinking about that on the way over to the studio today. Why in the world did I start this project? And going back to 1997, I was finishing my MFA at the university in creative writing. And I was thinking about a big project, not for the MFA, but just I was really in the writing mode about then. And I thought, why do people love theater so much? As I do, and the theater community, and why do people keep doing theater, and why do audiences keep coming? And I pondered that forever, and I was curious about that. And so I got to thinking, you know, nobody's written a history of theater in Alaska. History is one of my minors when I was an undergraduate. And I thought, well, I'll just start some research. So I did some research that last semester of my MFA, went over to the Daily News and logged in into a FileMaker Pro program on my computer, logged in about 400 productions that had been reviewed that were in the newspaper, the old newspapers, going back as far as I could go. And then after I had that, I thought, well, why don't I put in all of my reviews, because that'll take us from 1983 up through 97. And I started logging all those in. And so I had this wonderful computer program that had the dates and the names of the plays and the playwrights and the cast and the venue and the director's name and the details of the scenic designer and whether or not it was reviewed. And I had this wonderful program, and I thought, now what am I going to do with all this information? And it evolved. I thought, I've got all this. Let's put it together in some kind of a format.
And it's so much more than reviews. It's the inside stories, the backstories of all the people who have been theater people in Anchorage, as well as the theaters themselves. And that's why it's so much fun to read.
It's a story about people, really. In fact, after I found a publisher finally, one of the peer reviewers said it really is a story about people. It's not a story about places. It's not a story about venues. It's really not even a story about plays. It's a story about people and what they do in theater.
Yeah, and it's very important, too. Like, one of the elders of theater just passed, Frank Brink, and so...
And before that, Jack Wandell died last year. He was
right,
one of my primary sources.
Except for your book. And as we were saying, too, we're not getting so many reviews anymore, and that is the living record of...
It is the living record, and I discovered again and again that there was no record of... of things having taken place, especially prior to the 50s. I was fortunate enough to talk to Lorene Harrison before she died, and then talked to one of her daughters, Carol Ann Dodd, and she had some playbills going back from Lorene's collection.
Bless the Rat Packers of the world.
Right. Bless the Rat Packers is right. But when so I was able to go back to, I think, 1927 is the earliest playbill I could find in Anchorage. But when I went to other, like ACT and Cyrano's and places like that, the record, and out north especially, the records just weren't there. And Theater Guild couldn't find really many records, so I had to go through a lot of scrapbooks and to find all the details and that's how it all came together. People gave me their scrapbooks, and I went through them. I went through boxes and boxes at Out North, just looking for things, because Jay and Jean, the founders of Out North, did save things, but they weren't organized. They were just thrown in big boxes. And you know, I've been after you for years to please put the date of your productions on your playbills.
Oh, we heeded that.
And you're doing that. You're doing that now, but many, many places never put a date on their playbills. So you can find a playbill. You don't know what year it is or what month that it took place.
Well, I noted in your earlier manuscript that it went back, theater in Anchorage goes back as early as 1916. When the Empress Movie Theater could also accommodate live theater, and I thought that was fun.
Yes, and I wish that I'd been able to find some actual production material from the old Empress from, say, 1916, 1917. And given the amount of time that I had available, because I was working full-time the entire time that I was writing this book, that's my excuse, I'm hoping another scholar will come along one of these days and use my book as a foundation and then go back and do a more thorough job, because there's a lot more there. I mean, when this book finally comes out, I hopefully this month, it's about 340 pages, I think, the published version with about 40 pages of photographs, or 40 photos, so that's probably 20 pages. That probably is only half of what really happened during the last 90 years.
It's true, but the challenge of making the choices, especially for the pictures, must have been very difficult.
That was. I had them. I had collected photos, as many as I could, from people. I sent an email out to the entire theater community and said, "Help! Can you donate photos to this project?" And many people donated some beautiful, beautiful photographs. Other people donated some snapshots that were wonderful as historical records, but they really weren't usable. So I had them spread out all over my dining room table, trying to figure out, you know, how many I could use black and white and how many I could use for color, and whether I should have them organized in the book chronologically. So I ended up doing black and white chronologically, followed by color chronologically, and I think that's the way the final book will come out.
And we're going to get to see this final book soon. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I'm a little confused about that. Yeah. When I signed the contract with Edwin Mellon Press, it's an academic publisher, a scholarly press, last January, their instructions to the authors were to have all of your materials, your edited materials, to them by mid-year, and that they would have the book out probably by the end of the year. So in June, I had everything finished. I'd completely edited it. It had been peer-reviewed. I'd collected the photographs, arranged everything, and sent the materials off to the publisher, and didn't hear a word for a long time. And then someone told me that they had seen it on the web, my book, advertised through Barnes & Noble for ordering, and it said it would be released September 28th. And so I sent an email to the publisher, and I said, this was in September, and I said, I haven't received my copies of the book yet, but Barnes & Noble is saying it's going to be out September 28th. And the publisher wrote back and said, we have no control over what Barnes & Noble says, but the book is still in production. So I'm assuming that it will be out sometime in November. And that would be about what they had said in their original information to me.
So if Barnes & Noble has it, Amazon.com is sure to have it, too.
Right.
And I'm hoping we can have one of those friends and colleagues parties at Cyrano's.
Oh, that would be wonderful, wouldn't it?
Yeah, how appropriate to have a theater book signed in a theater.
Well, I hope that the listeners know that I'm not getting any royalties from this. Apparently, that's not unusual with an academic publisher. This is a library book. And so when I tell people about the book, I just want them to know I'm not hawking it for my own financial gain. I was just grateful to find a publisher, because it had been turned down by three commercial publishers as unmarketable, essentially. And so I had given up on finding a publisher until I ran into Professor David Edgecombe at the university last year. And he said, he asked me how the book was coming. And I said, well, it's done and it's in the archives and it's probably never going to get published. And he said, oh, try my publisher. And so he gave me the name and they grabbed it. They took it.
How exciting. Yeah, I know David's book is about rehearsing in Shakespearean times.
Right, yes.
Our guest is Catherine Statham, who has written a book about the history of theater here in Anchorage. You said earlier, Catherine, that the book is really a story of people. Could you tell us who some of your main characters are and a little bit about them?
I had a hard time organizing the material because it covers 1915 through 2005. And I assembled all of my research and had it in folders at home. First, I had it chronologically, and that didn't work. And then I had it according to type of play, and that didn't work. And finally, I thought the only way this is going to work is by era, because Alaska being Anchorage being Anchorage, people come and people go. And they bring with them their talents, and then they leave, and they leave those seeds behind. And so I realized at that point that I should organize it around the people who were involved. And, of course, the name of Frank Brink is, I mean, you know, I knew that that was going to have to be a chapter, even though it bleeds over. His tenure in Anchorage over about 30 years bleeds over into other organizations. There was Frank Brink. There was Jack Wandell. And Jack Wandell, a lot of people don't know about today, but that was my first audition in 1958 here in Anchorage.
As an actress.
As an actress. Mm-hmm. He was auditioning, and he ran the Anchorage Drama Lab, and he and his wife, forgotten her name now, McGrath was her last name. But anyway, I memorized a scene from St. Joan, George Bernard Shaw, of course, and got there to the audition and completely froze, blanked. And he was so kind. Yes, he was so kind and nice, and I'd never forgotten that. So many years later, when I got my degree in theater, I kept thinking back to that and thinking about Jack. Mm-hmm. And so, by golly, with Bob Pond's help, I was able to track Jack Wandell down and interview him by telephone.
Wonderful.
So over about a two-year period, I interviewed him about his time here in Anchorage, which was in the 50s. And the mid-50s to the mid-60s. And he was a colleague of Reuben Gaines. And Reuben was the resident playwright of the Anchorage Drama Lab. And Frank Brink was around during that time, too. So there was that era.
This led to productions where? Where did these guys produce their plays?
They produced them at West High in the Anchorage. In fact, the auditorium at West High, the West Anchorage High School auditorium, the one that was just renovated, Jack directed the first full-length play there, which was Detective Story, and Jack Roderick was in that. I got to interview Jack Roderick about his experience there, and that was, I believe, in 1956.
Are there any Reuben Gaines scripts still out there?
I don't know who has control of the Reuben Gaines estate, but he wrote several plays. And one of them, I write about two or three of them, I think, in the book. I actually saw one of them either in 1957 or 58, Salvation on Saturday. And I've never forgotten that production. It was down at the old Sidney Lawrence Auditorium on where the Center for the Performing Arts is now. So plays were produced, to answer your question, plays were produced then on the West High stage. 2,000 seats there, and they would often sell out on weekends. And then the about 500 seats in the old Sidney Lawrence Auditorium downtown. And then the building K at the university had been built. I'm trying to remember. I'm thinking it was in the early 60s. And that auditorium that we now call the Wendy Williamson was another venue.
Mm. Well, you know, I'm curious because you do sort of organize, at least in this manuscript, by theaters. And there's one theater that I've always been very curious about, and you really tell the story, and that is the Anchorage Repertory Theater, which was a major event in Anchorage. And I wonder if you would tell us some of your stories about that.
One of the peer reviewers, and I don't know the name of the person because they are done anonymously through the publisher, some of the peer reviews are, said that in his review or her review, that that chapter can stand alone. In fact, many of the chapters in the book can stand alone as stories, just little books of their own. And I think the history of the Alaska Repertory Theater, which again is a story about people, it's a story about Paul Brown and Bob Farley. And so I had was able to contact Paul and Bob and interview them. And I went through all of the archives at the university, the All Alaska Repertory Theater board minutes, starting from 1976, and it folded in 1988. And the subtitle of that, I believe, of that chapter in the new book is A Story of Money and Art. And Bob Farley, who was the artistic director, and Paul Brown, who was the producing director, were very candid with me. And so I had all of the board minutes. I was able to ask them some very probing questions. You know, what happened? How did it happen? What were the high points? What were the low points? What were the mistakes you made? And as I said, they were candid. And I think that chapter does stand on its own. It was the only Lort B theater ever in the history of Alaska so far. Lort is League of Regional Theaters, Class B.
Yeah, Jerry came up and acted with the Alaska Rep when it was early days. And, of course, when we lived here, he was in that famous Othello.
Oh, yes.
The Othello with the Jamaican accent.
Oh, I know.
Well, what happened to that company? I've heard various tales about it. Why did they fold?
The public funding dried up.
It was also board decisions. They didn't really have to fold, I don't think.
It was complex. There were a lot of reasons. My sense is that there was so much public funding. I mean, they started out with, I think their first year in 76, they got a grant for about $300,000. And then the last time they were in the money, like 10 years later, it was $3.5 million. So right. You can see that was public money.
But there was mythology, too.
But they didn't have – oh, it's what?
There was mythology, too, about spending $1,000 on an authentic stamp.
Oh, definitely,
that kind of thing.
Definitely. Yeah. They had a lot of money. There was a lot of money available. And the board, I don't know if the board took it for granted, but they really weren't a fundraising board. Mm. And a lot of this money, it wasn't misspent, and a lot of it had to do, there were strings attached to a lot of the money, the public monies. You could not invest in buildings, so they never could use that money to have their own venue. And as you know, Sandy, as the proprietor of Cyrano's, mm-hmm. unless you have your own building, your day is probably limited.
It does make a difference if you're a nomadic company for survival.
Oh, definitely. And so there were just a lot of reasons. And when the money dried up, I think Paul and Bob got tired. And it was just time to move on. And that was about 10 years into their tenure. And they left. And they brought in, the board brought in Andrew Traister, mm-hmm. and he was here for about a year and a half, and he got here, and I think that he was probably appalled at the lack of money that he had to operate with, and the fact that the whole city was kind of in a slump, the mid-80s, the real estate crash, the oil crash, it affected the economy a great deal. Their subscribers were drying up, and the board hadn't been a fundraising board, and I think they got tired, too. That was just my impression. But it's been a while since I interviewed them, and I haven't read my book in a while either, so I can't remember all the details. But they did some wonderful work, and they're part of the legacy.
Well, yeah, there are some residual benefits from them, such as Lauren Miller and people who came to work for them.
Oh, yes. And synergy grew out of the rep.
Right.
Sharon Harrison and Jamie Greenleaf gave me so much information. Well, Jamie, he had been a set designer for the rep who came up and then stayed and was a partner in Synergy. And Sharon shared a lot about the founding of Synergy, which is another chapter in the book. And also it's about people. Even though these are about companies, they're really, the companies are about the people and the people who found them and the visions they have. And that's why there's a whole chapter on Out North and Jay Brouse and Gene Dugan and their vision. And it's hard to remember now what it was like in the early 80s for gays. Mm-hmm. It was the beginning of the AIDS knowledge. There was a lot of gays were not out like they are now. Things have changed a lot. And they took a big chance in establishing this company where they didn't want to be known as a gay theater, but they wanted to do plays that would at least enlighten audiences about homosexuality and about the troubles and the difficulties that that they had and the discrimination.
And they were very successful at that.
They were. And they got their own building. They got that library building over at Grandview Gardens near Burgon 15th, and that made a big difference.
I love that Jay just sort of accidentally came to Alaska. You want to tell
Jean.
That story? I mean, Jean, do you want to tell that story?
Well, as I recall, and again, I haven't read my own book in a while. As I recall, Jean, who had a master's degree in Gene Dugan, we're talking about, had a master's degree in theater from he's dual citizenship in England, and he had a master's degree from one of the colleges in London. In theater, but he was working somewhere in the United States and heard of an opportunity in Tokyo. As I recall, he flew to Tokyo, did some work, was coming back to get a job in San Francisco, got drunk in Tokyo, got on the wrong airplane. You could do it in those days. There was no TSA. We're talking about this would have been the late 70s, and got on the wrong plane, ended up in Anchorage, Alaska, got off the plane and thought, what am I going to do now? So actually, Gene worked as a janitor out at the university for a while, and he met Jay, the love of his life. And they formed a partnership. And then Gene got a job with the Alaska Repertory Theater, which had been established in 76, and he worked his way up to comptroller, as I recall. I can't remember all the details. And so but the word got out that he was a director and he was an experienced director. And so he directed a huge hit play on the military base on Fort Richardson, The Good Doctor. And it went on to win many, many awards, and that established his reputation. And I think that gave Gene and Jay the confidence to start their own group. And at first they were producing under the auspices of Arctic Moon Stage Company. Richard Benavides was part of that group. But anyway, they established their own group, their own 501c3, started Out North Theater, and their first play was a big hit, My Blue Heaven, a play about lesbian life, a comedy. And it went on to win prizes at the ACT Festival, the ACT Fest in Haines.
Yeah, I think they celebrated their anniversary with a reprise.
Yes, a reprise with almost the same cast.
25 years later.
I know. Isn't that amazing? Isn't it?
Yes.
And think of how far. I mean, now nobody blinks about a homosexual scene on television we're even post Will and Grace at this point. People, you know, there are still some hurdles, like gay marriage, but
it is like you're saying, it's all about people, and theater is a way to build those bridges to see other people's perspective and see that they're
It's how we tell our stories. And when we first started this interview, I said, you know, I was curious back in grad school. Well, I've been curious for many years, actually. Why do people keep doing theater? Why is it a complex?
Because they're crazy.
Is it? You're speaking as a playwright.
but that's bad.
But what is it? And I was thinking of what deep psychological drives do we have?
What did
and
you conclude?
I concluded that we just love to tell our own stories.
Yes.
We love to tell our own stories, whether we're pre-Greeks and we're sitting around in a cave somewhere and we're, you know, around a bonfire and we're telling our own stories about the hunt or about grandfather or about grandmother or about crossing the river. Those same stories, we just aren't compelled. Now, why are we compelled to do that? I don't know. But we are, and we keep doing it. So I think it's a simple answer. We have to tell our own stories one way or another.
And luckily, some people are extraordinarily gifted storytellers.
Yes, some people are.
Catherine, I realize that your book is an academic publication and that it's going to be made available to university libraries and as such. But here in Anchorage, your supposedly unmarketable book probably is pretty marketable to the theater community
in the city.
So there's a lot of people.
How do we get this book, which is going to be just an academic publication elsewhere? How can we get our own home copy?
Well, first of all, as I said earlier, I don't get any royalties, so I'm not hawking this book. But there are some affordable copies will be available to friends and colleagues of the author, and people can get in touch with Sandy at Cyrano's, and she has a flyer on that. And also, I will be in Valdez in May, chairing a panel on writing about theater.
Oh, that's perfect.
I'm excited about that. And the publisher, when I told the publisher about that, that I would be at the Last Frontier Theater Conference in May, they said that they would provide those affordable books. So there will be flyers. There won't be books there, but there will be flyers so that people can order the book directly from the publisher and
Great
not have to
idea.
Go through the bookstores.
Now, who else will be on that panel, do you know or suspect?
I was just invited by Dawson Moore and accepted, and I think maybe Mike Hood might be on the panel, and he is now at the University of Indiana. Pennsylvania.
It's so
confusing. Yeah, it's IUP, Indiana University of Pennsylvania. But anyway, Mike Hood is another big part of this book because he and Frank Beebe and some others, Ev Kent and a few others, established the university theater system here. Even though Frank Brink had started theater at APU, or what was AMU, Alaska Methodist University. Mike Hood and his colleagues took it to another level. They really did.
They took it to National College.
And made that arts building happen.
Yeah. Okay. There's so much more to explore. And when this friendly, more inexpensive version comes out, I hope you all get a copy because truly it is fun to read. And as you said in the first book in a cherry celebration, I did it for love. I think that does explain why many people are addicted to theater. Thank you for joining us, Kathy, and thank you for joining us. And we hope you do again next month for the next audition of Alaska Radio Reader Rambler.